All right, everybody. Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. We are live, underway a little bit later than I had hoped, but we are still live. As always, please feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us, or you can also visit our blog, www.orble.com/dragnet-radio-show. And you can visit visit our online community, dragnetradio.ning.com. And we have got quite a nice episode ahead. We've got the big trial. It's really weird, actually. When I downloaded this and I got it, initially I thought the title was The Big Trail. That was actually the title of the MP3 pile. But when you look into it, it's The Big Trial. The Big Trial is actually quite unique compared to most Dragnets. It focuses on after the arrest. So it's kind of fascinating. We have, and it's going to be an interesting episode. This is one, actually, I have not listened to before. So I am hearing it for the first time here. So my remarks are basically live and off the cuff. So it's going to be very interesting. I do encourage you to please go over and cast a vote for us on Podcast Alley. You can leave a comment, but it's not required. It's really appreciated because it reflects the popularity of the show, and it makes it so more people are going to be able to listen to it because it'll be promoted on Podcast Alley. Anyway, so that is about it. For the introduction, let's go ahead and we will get right into it with the big trial here on the Old Time Dragnet Show.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to accident investigation, felony detail. In the early hours of the morning, a woman pedestrian is struck down by a hit-and-run driver. Your job, find him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, September 4th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of traffic division. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Captain Sullivan, Commander AID. My name's Friday. It was 12:45 a.m. when I got to the second floor at 123 South Figueroa Street. Accident investigation. The Record Bureau. Hi, Wanda.
Hi. Sergeant Romero, come back with you. I got a phone message for him.
Well, he's over at Georgia Street. He'll be back in a couple of minutes. You got time to take a 15-7?
Sure.
I got some additional information on a hit-and-run felony.
All right.
Whew. Pretty warm up here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Coffee over there if you want it.
No, thanks.
All right, officer's memo. Subject?
Investigation of hit-run felony. BR number 467923. Location, 7th and Carondelet Streets. It's Carondelet.
Mm-hmm.
September 3rd, 11:15 p.m.
Division reporting, AID. Division of occurrence?
Central.
Hmm?
Central.
Date and time occurred, September 3rd, 11:15 p.m., location of occurrence, 7th and Carondelet. Is this going to run long, Sergeant?
Oh, page and a half.
Go faster in shorthand. I can transcribe it later.
All right. This is for Captain H.W. Sullivan, commanding AID.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, on the above date at 11:20 p.m., the undersigned officers went to the corner of 7th and Carondelet Streets in response to an ambulance follow-up traffic.
Mm-hmm.
On our arrival there, you got any matches, Wanda?
Yeah, here you are.
Oh, okay, thanks. On our arrival there, we were met by 11T. We witnessed ambulance attendants placing an unconscious woman in an ambulance. She appeared to be critically injured. The victim was removed to George Street Receiving Hospital.
All right.
We then interviewed a man who identified himself as Chester J. Crawford, 540 Green Oak Drive. He stated that he was acquainted with the injured woman and that her name was Sheila Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N,
mm-hmm.
7832 and a half 7th Street. Crawford told us that he was taking her home from a dance and they arrived at the intersection of 7th and Carondelet Streets at approximately 11:15 p.m.
11:15.
Okay? Crawford further stated that while he and Sheila Gordon attempted to cross the intersection, an automobile headed west on 7th Street went through the red traffic light. Did you read that last part, Mike?
Attempted to cross the intersection, an automobile headed west on 7th Street went through the red traffic light.
Okay. Crawford told us that he jumped out of the path of the car and tried to pull Miss Gordon with him. He said that the car struck her down without slowing down, continued out 7th Street and disappeared.
Well, wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And disappeared. Okay.
Crawford stated the hit-and-run car was either a Dodge or a Plymouth, but it could have been either last year's model or this year's. He described the car... Is this too fast, boy?
That's all right.
He described the car as either light blue in color or bluish-green. Said that he failed to get the entire license number, but that the last three numbers on the rear plate were either 804 or 304.
804 or 304.
That's right.
Okay.
Fine. Crawford said he made an attempt to follow the hit-run car, but that he was unable to obtain transportation. He stated he then ran to a phone at the Corsev Bar and Grill.
Spell that?
What?
Corsev.
Oh, C-O-R-S-E-V. That's at 7th and Carondelet, mm-hmm. and called the police. And the undersigned officers then obtained Crawford's full name, address, phone number, and proceeded to question residents in the neighborhood and
right.
were unable to locate any other witnesses besides Crawford.
Okay.
Hi. How'd you do?
Oh, sorry, that's about all. Doctor says we won't be able to talk to her for at least a couple of days, maybe not at all.
What's your chances?
50-50 if she's heavy on luck. Three broken ribs, brain concussion, internal injury.
What Lee Jones had to say?
Is that all the report, Sergeant?
Oh, yeah, Wanda. We'll have the rest for you a little later. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. I'll type this much up as soon as I can.
Thanks.
Sure.
What Lee Jones had to say?
Nothing. He and Fincher went over the area for an hour. No broken glass from headlights at the PI. No tire impressions worth anything.
No physical evidence.
Where does it leave us?
With a half-dead girl and no suspects.
What do you think, Joe?
I don't know. It's a sour one.
That guy she was with, Crawford, not too much help. Looked a little nearsighted to me.
He saw well enough to get out of the way of that car.
You got the notes. How much to give us?
Let me see. I got it here in the book. The car was either a Dodge or a Plymouth, late model. Color, either light blue or blue-green. And the last three numbers on the license plate were 804 or 304.
It's a big field to pick from.
That's the only lead we own.
You can call it that, yeah.
Well, I guess we better talk to DMV, get the dope on all cars fitting that description that Crawford gave us.
It's going to be a hard trip. At least 3,000 cars to track down.
Probably closer to 4.
What do we do for help?
We can ask the captain in the morning.
I'll get him.
Okay.
Bracket Bureau Romero. You have it? Yeah, we'll bring him right over. Yeah,
bye. It's Lee Jones again.
Yeah.
Says he wants the clothes Sheila Gordon was wearing at the time of the accident. He figures when she got hit, her clothes must have left fabric marks on the front of the car.
It might work. There's only one trouble.
What's that?
You can paint off fabric marks. Well, it's a long list. Let's take it from the top.
Yeah.
Find the car. Tuesday, September the 5th. We called Mark Benson at DMV and asked for full information on all vehicles fitting the general description of the hit-run car. We went back and talked to the only witness to the hit-and-run, the victim's boyfriend, Chester Crawford. He could add nothing to what he had already told us. There was no response to the local teletype and the all points that were sent out the night before. Garages, auto repair, and paint shops throughout the city were also alerted. Meantime, at General Hospital, the victim, Sheila Gordon, was still close to death. The search for the hit-run car went on. 2 days passed. Thursday, September 7th, the information we requested from DMV was being checked out and compiled. Ben and I met with Captain Sullivan.
That's the last of them, Skipper. All the cars in this area that fit the general description of the one we're after.
You just get it?
Yeah.
How many cars did they list?
4,620.
Even more than you expected, eh?
Yeah.
No chance at all of narrowing it down?
None that we can see, no.
Terrific order.
Well, we tried to figure it from every angle. Now we can do it two ways.
Yeah?
We keep the alert on for the hit-run car around the divisions, all the garages in town, the auto repair shops. In other words, we can wait it out. Maybe we'll get the guy, maybe not.
Yeah?
Or we can check out every one of the cars on this list and the registered owners.
Well, the first way isn't going to do the job. We know that. 4,600 cars. How much help would you need?
About 30, 40 men.
How long?
A couple of weeks, maybe more.
All right. I think I can get them from Metro Division. When do you want to start?
First thing tomorrow.
Okay, I'll set it up.
All right, Skipper.
Thanks.
Excuse me, Joe. There's a lady out here to see you.
Okay, thanks. We'll check you in the morning, Skipper.
All right. That's her over there.
Thanks.
My name's Friday, ma'am. This is Sergeant Romero.
How do you do? I'm Doyle Lytell, Sergeant. I'm Sheila Gordon's landlady, the girl in the accident.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, Mr. Crawford, he was with Sheila that night. He told me about you, and he said he thought you might be able to help.
How do you mean?
Well, it's a long story. You see, when Sheila Gordon first came to live at my rooming house, she was a good girl like the rest. Lately, well, I've been sick now and all, I don't like to say it.
Yeah?
Well, frankly, last few months before the accident, Sheila just went bad completely.
I don't think I follow you, ma'am.
Oh, you know, carousing, all kinds of men, visitors, had a different man in her apartment every night.
Well, we're investigating a hit-run case, ma'am.
Sheila gets out of the hospital. Hate to talk about her when she's sick like this, but when she's all right, I don't want her back in my rooming house.
I'm afraid that's none of our business either, ma'am.
But if you could talk to Sheila, persuade her to move from my house. I don't want any wrangle with the rental board again. Couldn't you talk to her?
I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do, ma'am. You better talk to her yourself.
It'll just be another row like the last time. Shameless woman. I don't want Sheila Gordon back in my house. I'll go to that hospital myself and tell her.
She's a pretty sick girl.
It's not my fault. Go right over to that hospital and tell her what I think of her.
She's hurt pretty bad.
So am I. She's hurt me. What's the difference?
You haven't been run over by a car. Next morning, Sergeants Reed and McLennan, Ben and myself, joined the 40 men from Metropolitan Division who had started checking out the first of the 4,620 suspected cars. The detail was broken down into teams, and each team was handed a list containing the names of 100 registered car owners. It was a long job and a dull one. Dozens of people weren't at home when we called. We had to rig up a system of checkbacks for each one of these. Some cars had changed hands two and three times. That meant more checking. By the end of the second week, we'd gone through more than half of the 4,600 names on the list. By the end of the fourth week, we had less than 1,000 to go. At the General Hospital, the victim, Sheila Gordon, was pronounced out of danger and recovering. We questioned her, but all she could tell us was that she thought the hit-and-run car was a dark color. The search went on. Monday, October 6th, Ben and I spent a 10-hour day checking a list of car owners south of town. It was 6:35 p.m. when we got back to the office.
Hi.
Hi, Reed. How'd you do today?
Fair. Looks like we got one.
What do you mean?
Guy's name is Ralph Angelo. Let's see. 8690 Backerly Road. Checked him out early this morning. First call.
What'd you get?
One's a late model Plymouth, light blue. License number, there it is, 17R2804. Wasn't home. Talked to his wife.
Yeah?
She said the car's been sitting home in the garage for the past month. Husband won't drive it.
What's his story?
Told her there was something wrong with it. He was going to trade it in. McLennan and I tried it. Car's in first-class shape.
What about the front end of the car?
Pretty clean. One of the bars in the radiator grill slightly bent. Soft crease on the hood, another one in the right fender.
Did you bring the car in?
Yeah. Crown and I have been working on it since lunch down the garage.
Anything else?
Found a gas receipt in the glove compartment, dated September 3rd, night of the accident.
Where's Angelo now?
Santa Barbara, business trip. Due home tonight about 10. McLennan and I will pick him up then, see what he's got to say.
And sounds good. How many possibilities does that make, Joe?
Well, let me see. Out of 3,700 we've checked, about 4 good ones. I'll get that. Accident investigation, Friday.
Hi, Joe. This is Lee Jones.
Yeah, Lee.
Just finished checking the Plymouth Reed and McLennan brought in.
Did you find anything?
Fabric prints on the front bumper and the hood.
Huh?
Indentation of soft object on hood and right front fender. Something else on that fender.
What's that?
Set of lip impressions.
What's it mean?
We found the car. Only one job left.
Yeah?
Find the driver.
Yeah. October 6th, 10 p.m. Suspect Ralph Angelo was picked up at his home by investigating officers and brought downtown to the interrogation room. Sergeants Reed and McLennan, Ben and myself questioned him for 3 hours. At 1:30 a.m., we took Angelo to the county jail where he was booked on suspicion of 501 vehicle code. Hit-and-run felony. The next morning, we obtained a warrant from the district attorney's office, and later that day, Ralph Angelo was arraigned in Municipal Court Division 7. A date was set for his preliminary hearing in municipal court. Sheila Gordon recovered from her injuries and was released from the general hospital. On October 10th, the preliminary hearing was held. Sheila Gordon was on the stand most of the morning. After the noon recess, I was called to testify.
Raise your right hand. Tell me, swear, the testimony about to give hanging in this case be the truth, whole truth, nothing but truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name.
Joe Friday.
Be seated. State your name, please.
Joe Friday.
Your address?
4656 Collis Avenue.
Your occupation?
I'm a police officer in the Palatka City of Los Angeles.
You one of the investigating officers assigned to this case?
I am.
Did you have a conversation with the defendant regarding this case?
I did.
Where?
In the traffic division at 123 South Figueroa Street.
Who's present?
The defendant, Sergeants McLennan, Reed, Romero, and myself.
Were the statements made by the defendant free and voluntary?
They were.
Were there any promise of immunity or reward or the use of force or violence conducive to make the statement?
No, there was not.
You tell the court the extent of the conversation at that time.
Well, first of all, I asked him if he was the registered owner of a 1948 Plymouth automobile, California license number 17R2804. He admitted that he was. And then I asked him if he was driving that car on the night of September 3rd. He said he was, but that he did not drive anywhere near the location of the hit-and-run felony that night at 7th and Carondelet Street.
Did the defendant tell you where he drove his car that night?
No, sir.
You asked the defendant where he drove his car that night of September 3rd?
Yes, I did.
And what did he ask?
Well, he said, none of your business.
Did you persist in this line of questioning?
Yes, I did.
Defendant continued to refuse to give you the information?
That's right.
Did the defendant state where he was on the night of September 3rd, between 10 p.m. and midnight?
He refused to tell us.
You advised the defendant at that time that his car had been impounded for investigation?
That's right.
Yeah. You advised him that several points of incriminating evidence had been found in the car?
Yes, we did.
And what did he say in answer?
Well, he said, you can't prove a thing. I wasn't near the place. You can't prove a thing.
Was that the extent of the conversation between you and the defendant?
It was.
Thank you, that's all.
Counsel for defense?
No questions, Your Honor.
Leland Jones, come to stand.
Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony about to give pending this case be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but truth, so I begin.
I do.
State your name.
Lee Jones.
Your occupation?
I'm a police officer in and for the city of Los Angeles.
What particular detail are you assigned to?
I'm a lieutenant in charge of the police crime laboratory.
Well, counsel for defense stipulate the witness as a qualified forensic chemist?
So stipulated.
Mr. Jones, you are the commander in charge of the police department's scientific investigation division, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Jones, I will show you a photograph, an automobile. California license number 17A2804 to be marked People's Exhibit C. Have you ever seen this car before?
I have.
Where and when did you see it, please?
I saw it at the traffic division garage, 123 South Figueroa Street, Monday, October 6th this year.
Did you make an examination of this car at that time?
I did.
What did the examination consist of? And what were your findings?
I made a systematic examination of the car using oblique lighting from a 500-watt photoflood lamp and a bell-type reflector. I found the following evidence. On the front bumper of the car, I found fabric marks consisting of 51 threads to the inch. I then took a perpendicular photograph of those marks with a copy camera. Here is a photograph of that portion of the bumper containing those marks.
No, no, I wish this photograph be marked People's Exhibit D for identification.
Let it be so.
You proceed, please, Mr. Jones. What else did you find in your examination of the defendant's car?
I found fabric marks on the cowling of the car, extending back under the hood. These marks were made by fabric having a weave of 38 ribs to the inch. I have here a photograph of those marks.
Thank you. I'm going to ask this photograph to mark People's Exhibit E.
So, Mark,
what else did you find in your examination of the car, Mr. Jones?
I also noted an indentation in the right portion of the car's hood. It had the appearance of having been made by a soft object enclosed in fabric striking the car.
Would a human body struck by a car make such an indentation?
Yes, it would. Here's a photograph I took of that indentation on the defendant's car.
I'm going to ask this photograph to mark as People's Exhibit M.
So marked.
All right, continue, Mr. Jones.
On the top of the right-hand fender of the car, I found a lip imprint in red lipstick. I lifted that print with a piece of cellophane tape, then placed the tape on a plain white card, which I have right here with me.
Thank you. Ask this card to mark People's Exhibit G.
So mark.
Now, Mr. Jones, these pieces of evidence which you found on the defendant's car, did you compare them with other objects?
I did.
Will you please state what comparisons you made and your findings?
Well, in the first place, I find that the fabric marks in People's Exhibit C, taken from the bumper of the car, has the same count per inch as the stockings worn by the victim, Sheila Gordon. Secondly, I found the fabric marks shown in People's Exhibit D from the cowling hood of the car to be the same count per inch as the coat worn by the defendant. I further made a comparison between the lip imprint found on the right fender, as shown in People's Exhibit G, and various exemplars of the victim's lips. She made the exemplars by placing her lips against heavy, stiff white paper. I have those exemplars in with me.
I said remarks to People's Exhibit H.
So, Mark.
Now, may I ask, how did the lip imprint taken from the defendant's car compare with these sample imprints made by the victim's lips?
I found that there were 17 points of similarity between the two. These points of similarity consist of various small lines or wrinkles which match identically, as may be seen in the photograph.
Jones, do you have an opinion as to the origin of the lip imprint on the defendant's car as shown in People's Exhibit G?
I do.
What is that opinion?
It's my opinion that the lip imprint on the defendant's car as shown in Exhibit G was made by the lips of the victim, Sheila Gordon.
The witness.
Now, Mr. Jones, we recognize, of course, that you're a qualified forensic chemist. But are you going to set yourself up as an expert on women's lips, too?
Well, I've done some research in that department, too.
Mr. Jones, isn't it possible that any number of lip imprints made by different people would look exactly alike?
No, it is not possible. There are no two things in the world exactly alike. There are no two sets of lip imprints alike.
Well, anyone who's been around at all would know that. That's all, Mr. Jones. Thank you.
The people's case, Your Honor.
Counsel for the defense? We will not offer any defense at this time, Your Honor.
It appears to me that a felony has been committed and reasonable cause to believe that the defendant committed it. The defendant will be held to answer in Superior Court.
Tuesday, November 4th. Suspect Ralph Angelo was arraigned in Superior Court, Department 88. And the date of his trial was set for December 1st. During the weeks preceding the set of the trial, we worked with Lee Jones and the district attorney's office preparing the case against Ralph Angelo. 2 days before the trial opened, we had a visit from one of the men from the DA's office, a process server.
Hi, Bert.
Hi. We got trouble.
Yeah?
Sheila Gordon's disappeared.
Wednesday, December 1st, Ralph Angelo's trial opened and Sheila Gordon was called to the stand. She failed to appear. We checked her few known friends in the city. They couldn't help. She had disappeared from her new address and taken everything with her. A bench warrant was issued by Superior Court for Sheila Gordon. The deputy district attorney succeeded in having the court grant a delay in order to find the missing girl, in this case, the complaining witness. Meantime, we got out a local broadcast and an APB. We got missing persons detail to help out in the search. Still no sign. Ralph Angelo's lawyer asked the court for dismissal of the hit-and-run felony case because of Sheila Gordon's failure to appear. On December the 8th, the court ruled on the motion.
Regarding the motion by the defense for dismissal of hit-and-run felony charges against Ralph C. Angelo, because of the prosecution's failure to produce the complaining witness, to wit, Sheila R. Gordon, the court feels it would not serve the interests of justice to continue the case. Case dismissed.
The search for Sheila Gordon went on. Behind us, we had logged 3 solid months of police work, checking and running down more than 4,000 cars, hours of labor in the crime lab, more hours pounding the pavement, questioning people, checking, rechecking. Without a trial and a conviction, it didn't mean a thing. 3 days before Christmas, we received information that the missing girl was living in a small town south of Los Angeles. Ben and I checked the address.
What was the apartment number?
7A,
wasn't it? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Again?
Sit down, make yourself at home. I'm sorry the place is such a mess. A little party earlier tonight. It's messed up.
What about the trial? Why didn't you show?
Come on, sit down. Say, I'll tell you what. I'll freshen up a little, put on some makeup.
What about the trial?
I didn't have anything against the guy. He didn't mean to run me down. You wouldn't happen to have a drink on you, would you?
You know better than that.
Why didn't you show up at the trial?
I told you, I didn't have anything against the guy.
What was it, a payoff?
Look, why don't we go out and get something, then we can come back and have a party.
How much did he give you?
$50. He was awful nice.
You agreed not to show in court.
I didn't have anything against the guy, that's all.
Better get your coat.
Why?
That's what the court wants to know.
You're taking me in. Why? Is there any law against forgiving?
Yeah, when you get paid for it.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On February 3rd, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 88, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Sheila Gordon was returned to Los Angeles and a new date was set for the trial of Ralph Angelo. Subsequently, he was tried and found guilty as charged. Angelo was also tried, along with Sheila Gordon, for compounding a felony. They were both convicted and received the sentence as prescribed by law. They are now serving their terms in the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
All right, welcome back. Wow, what an episode. That is, you know, absolutely amazing. Is there any crime against forgiving? No, it's the bribery that's really the problem here. Absolutely amazing when you look at the work that went into that case. It was just like, wow. The prescribed sentence they didn't mention. It's probably compounding a felony, which is probably not a huge offense. But she ended up seeing some time behind bars. I don't think courts generally do not take well to that type of conduct by witnesses, particularly when you've done a lot of work to put the case together. It's just absolutely absolutely amazing. Okay, and I did this actually. Showed us a little bit of why they didn't show more trial coverage usually, because they did a lot of this stuff. It was kind of interesting. They kind of departed from the normal way they investigate the cases, where they did a lot of this stuff. They told about it through You know, the first part, you know, he was talking to the transcriptionist. And then the second part of the show, they did a lot of the investigative stuff and the questioning of the suspect through court testimony. They don't usually show court evidence or court scenes, and I think they show why, because they're trying to be realistic. And court scenes, it was kind of dry. So those of you who, you know, grew up watching Perry Mason or something, well, it kind of sets an expectation. This is not exactly how courts really look. Okay, so that is it for... I'm going to ask, why does it sound like Adam is being fast-forward? The reason it sounds like that, it's talk shoe. There have been some issues on the stream. It should sound okay once we get the final episode uploaded. All right, so let's go ahead now, and we will take a listen now to part two of The Lady with the Gold Hair, with Jeff Regan, investigator. Now, when we left last time, Jeff Regan had been hired through the firm he works for to track down somebody who was threatening a famous Hollywood makeup artist. And ends up in this kind of low-down hotel where he finally finds the man he's looking for, only to have him shot very quickly after he meets him. So, as we open up this episode of Jeff Regan, Investigator, Jeff Regan, played by Jack Webb, is having to answer some questions about why Private Investigator is there and why this is actually happening. In terms of the dead body. He's going to have to explain some of this. So, let's go ahead and hear what Jeff Regan has to say, and we will now go to Jeff Regan, Investigator.
And now, back to the story of the lady with the golden hair. And Jeff Regan, investigator.
Well, after he came falling down the stairs at me and Flossie had a good cry over him, there wasn't anything to do but to call Central Homicide. They got there a few minutes later and went over the whole place, taking pictures and prints. Finally, a wagon pulled up, took what was left of Pete Berger down to the morgue. Detective Lieutenant Salvatore Wendetti, up to Homicide, asked everybody a lot of questions and shipped a couple of people downtown for a couple of different things and finally got around to me.
Regan, I think you ought to get yourself a new job. Every time the lion growls, you wind up at a corpse someplace and somebody has to ask you a question.
That wasn't my idea, Sally.
I might have to book you on technical charge.
Oh, stop it, will you? You know I didn't have anything to do with him getting shot.
When an ex-car named Pete Berger gets topped off just before a private dick gets around asking him a few questions, I got to ask the private dick some questions myself, or else the chief is going to ask me some questions.
Make sense?
All I know is that somebody's been shooting at a client of mine.
Mm-hmm. And that somebody's Pete Berger. How do you know?
Bullets came from a gun owned by Pete Berger, so I came down to see him.
Only he walks out all loaded down with 45 slugs and dies before you can say hello.
Isn't that the bunk? Who's your client, Regan?
Do I have to tell you?
No, but you will.
Company policy.
Company policy. Confidence in a client, Regan.
Can you arrest me for anything?
Depends. Material witness, maybe.
Yeah. While it's depending, I'll get a hold of the lion, he'll get a hold of Harry Presidio, and then I'll bet you $10 there'll be a writ of habeas corpus at the station by the time you get me there.
All right. You're clear. This is a murder case, Regan. That's a serious crime in anybody's town.
I don't know any more than I just told you, Sal.
You know the name of your client? Okay. Why was Pete shooting at him?
That's what I was going to ask Pete.
Oh, now just exactly where does that put us?
My client's safe and sound in his home, and Joe Canto's keeping an eye on him.
When Canto was pounding a beat for the department, some guys got away from him.
A lot of guys get away from a lot of cops, but not when the cop's watching. Canto's good at that, you know him.
Oh, sure. But it's a thought.
Well, it's no good.
Before Pete Berger went to San Quentin, he was never very handy with a gun because his eyes were so bad he couldn't see his hand in front of his face.
He didn't hit anything yesterday or today, but he was sure trying.
Now, Flossie told me Pete's been playing stuntman in pictures, making a buck at it. It seems he learned all his tricks while he was in the clink. They have a nice gym up there. I never tell what they'll do next. Still, can't understand why he'd all of a sudden go around shooting at somebody.
You figure it's Sally Young.
Maybe there was something personal and that Pete had to do it. And whoever Pete was shooting, I got kind of sore. Turn around and plug Pete tonight, huh?
My client's home. Safe.
Sure. Can't always be. Almost forgot. Pete Berger was a perfect setup for a wise guy. An ex-con who'd done 15 years, who learns his lesson, wants to make a straight dime, gets mad when anybody bothers him.
Blackmail.
It's been done before. Pete had a good, healthy bank balance. I guess he was saving up for his old age. But some wise guy finds out Pete's a con and says, I'll tell your boss unless you kick in. Then maybe Pete starts shooting to scare him into shutting up. Make sense?
Sounds like an old fairy tale, Sally.
But screwy enough to be the answer. Only this wise guy Pete's shooting at thinks Pete might be meaning business. So he just comes over here tonight and plugs Pete.
And who's the wise guy?
Your client. You aren't going to tell me his name?
I can't involve a client in a murder.
Oh, yeah, company policy. I almost forgot. Regan, I'll find out in the morning. We got some lawyers, too.
I know.
Couldn't tell me now?
I'll phone you in an hour, Sally.
Okay. Okay, Regan, you can talk to him first. But phone me.
Good night.
Night, Regan. See you around.
My watch said 4 o'clock by the time I got to the hills back of Laurel Canyon and started up Mulholland Drive. The usual fog was in the usual places, doing the usual things to trees and houses. And when I pulled up in front of Max's house, one light was burning in the window. The rest of the house looked dark. Everything was quiet. The first thing I noticed was cordite. It smells black and it means that guns have been fired. The whole room was full of it. Max Fladney was lying half on the floor and half on the table he'd used for a workshop. A bottle of spirit gum was spilled on the floor along with some false blonde hair and a cracked wig block. He had one free arm around a white plaster cast of a head, just like it was a doll. There were 2 blue holes in the middle of his forehead. I just stood there looking at him when I heard a noise in back of me. It was Canto, and he was on the floor at the foot of the bed.
Oh, no, don't try to move me, Regan. I've been laying here waiting for you. It's in my lungs somewheres. I don't think I got any blood to spare. Joey boy let you down, huh? It happened an hour after you left. I don't know who done it. A lot of noise in Max's room, and I come in, and next thing I know, I'm taking a slug myself. Hey, call me a doc, will you, Regan? I got a date tomorrow night. She's been trying to get rid of me. Does it give her a good excuse? Guess Lionel'll be mad, huh? Call me a doc, Regan, right quick.
Well, I made a lot of phone calls before it was all over. Hollywood Receiving Hospital, Wendetti, Central Homicide, and I got the lion out of bed and told him what had happened. He said he'd meet me at the hospital. I hung around a while and talked to Wendetti. He didn't have much to say. When he got through poking around, he gave me a lift as far as the hospital. The lion was standing around the hall when I got there. It was the first time I'd ever seen him look tired.
Hello, Regan. I just talked to the doctor. It's going to cost plenty.
How bad is it?
$25 a day for a room. Plus surgery.
No, I mean Canto.
Oh. Bullet penetrated upper lobe of his right lung. Here, they pulled this out.
45 slug.
Who shoots 45s that good?
Lots of people.
Same kind of people who go around killing Pete Berger and Max Vladney.
Yeah.
Canto getting himself shot's gonna eat up every penny we might have made on this thing.
Is money all you ever think of?
What else is there to think about? If you got it, you're fine. If you haven't got it, you're nothing but a bum.
One of your own men is lying in there wondering if he's ever going to live or die, and he took that slug because you sent him on the job.
Everybody dies. I'll give him a citation.
Oh, you big pile of blubber. I ought to push you out a window.
Now, talk like that isn't going to help anything.
No, but I know what
now,
is.
Now, wait a minute, Regan. This is a police job.
Oh, now it's a police job.
Yeah, like I told you. And you can't go running around sticking your snoot into a couple of killings and giving International a lot of bad publicity.
Now, get this, Fatso. I'm going out and find the guy who plugged Canto.
Now, you listen to
and
me.
I want it down in the books and the papers and any place else that an International operator brought in a guy who killed one of their clients and shot one of their men.
I won't be responsible for anything that happens.
Okay, if you don't like the way I do things, you can pull my license right off the wall and get yourself another boy.
Hey, where are you going? Come back.
Well, Mr. Regan, when I saw you at Max's yesterday afternoon, I didn't think you'd come by for that drink at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, come in. I was just having coffee. I have to be at the studio for an early makeup job.
You look all right to me the way you are.
Well, you can be nice. Will you have some coffee?
No, thanks.
Oh?
I just stopped by for a minute. I'm afraid I have some tough news for you.
Max. Something happened to Max.
He's dead.
Oh, no. Not Max. Oh, Max.
Somebody shot him 3 hours ago.
Why would anyone want to kill Max?
That's what I'm going to find out.
Max expected me to marry him. So many plans. What can I do to help, Mr. Regan? What can I do?
All right, now look. A smart cop named Wendetti is going to be knocking on your door pretty soon. He's going to ask you a lot of questions about Max. Give me the answers first.
Would you mind terribly if we sat down? Max was all I had. I want to be near someone.
Sure.
I know I'm acting silly about this. What is it I can tell you, Mr. Regan?
Did Max ever mention a man named Pete Berger?
No. Never heard that name before.
Well, he worked at the same studio. He was the one that shot at Max yesterday afternoon.
And he killed Max?
No. He's dead, too. He was shot to death an hour earlier. I was there.
I'm not very good at this kind of thing. What are you trying to tell me, Mr. Regan?
Both of these killings were done by an amateur, and not very good jobs. But there had to be some reason.
I don't know.
I've been in the business a long time, lady. Too long. People kill for money or love or just for the crazy feel of blasting a gun at somebody.
This has been a lot for you.
You know, if you find a reason, you find a killer. What kind of work would a makeup man be doing at home?
I don't know. Max always tried to improve his work. I suppose that's why he made the money he did.
He might have made a plaster cast of a head so he could study a face.
I suppose so. Yes.
Your face?
Yes, I suppose so. Why?
Well, it's a nice face. I've seen it in pictures.
Most press agents think my hair nicer.
Yeah, it is. Long, golden hair.
Does it feel soft and warm? The way you hoped it would feel?
Yeah, it does.
And my lips? I don't feel bad doing this. I never did love Max. I was indebted to him. I was terribly ill several years ago. He helped me.
I can see why he felt the way he did about you.
Can you? I like the way you did that.
I know what Max had been working on. It was something for you.
Really?
He was holding a plaster cast of your head in his arms when I found him. Of course, there was no hair on it, and it looked kind of funny.
Don't say that! Don't ever say a thing like that.
Yeah, now I got it.
What are you talking about?
Murder, lady, lots of it. You killed a poor ex-con because he bungled a job you blackmailed him into doing. You shot him last night because I was going to talk
to him.
Are
you crazy? Why would I do a thing like that?
Then you went over and you killed Max. And while you're at it, you pumped a slug or two into Joe
Canto. There's got to be a reason.
Every newspaper in the country is going to carry this story, lady. Oh, yeah. Hilda Graham, the one with all the long golden hair, is really as bald as a fresh egg.
Shut up! Don't you ever say anything like that in front of me? Why are you...
Go ahead, lady. Pick up that paperweight and I'll break you in two. Now, come on. Let's go.
No. Oh, no, you can't. You mustn't. They'll find out about my hair. Please. Please don't tell them about my hair. I couldn't stand that. Please. Oh, please. Please, you know how nice I can be.
Lady,
You're a bum.
Well, Max had been trying to get her to marry him, and she didn't want to marry anybody, so she killed him. The police stenographer scratched his head on that one until I explained that it was her hair, that long golden hair. Only it wasn't hers. It was a wig that Max had fixed up for her. She'd lost all hers when she was sick and couldn't stand the thought of anybody going around knowing it wasn't her own. Well, I guess you run into all kinds. A couple of days later, I saw Canto at the hospital. He'd had some transfusions and a lot of other things. He was coming along fine. He was reading a paper when I walked in.
Oh, Ray. So what is what, huh?
Hi, Joe.
I've been reading about that Hilda Graham. Too bad they don't take her picture without all that pretty hair. It'd serve her right.
Yeah. How you feeling?
Peachy. Regan, how long we been working for the line?
Too long.
How many people been killed and messed up in that time that me and you knows about personally?
Too many.
There's one thing I can't get through maneuvering. Why don't we get some other kind of a job? Real estate or movie extras or something. Why do we do it? Why do we do it, Jeff?
I don't know, Joe. I don't know.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan, with Wilms Herbert as Anthony J. Lyon. It's CBS same time next week for Trouble, Suspense, and Thrilling Adventure with Jeff Regan, Investigator. The role of Max Blatney was played by Hans Conried, with Barton Yarborough as Joe Canto. Betty Lou Gerson was Hilda Graham. Jack Crucian was Wendetti. Marlo Dwyer was Flossie. Jeff Regan, Investigator is written by E. Jack Newman, produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes, with special music by Del Castillo. This program came to you from Hollywood. Bob Lamond speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, we are back. Very odd to hear Jack Webb on CBS. Of course, Dragnet, an NBC property. Very interesting episode, and I was talking beforehand to Corey, who sent the tip on this episode, which features Barton Yarborough, who is the first a partner of Joe Friday, Ben Romero in the Dragnet series, featured him as the temporary partner here. This is what makes this so interesting, is to me, I think this is almost that In Conversation was just a precursor to Dragnet. Because this, I believe, was about his third different, private detective show. And, you know, and that In Conversation. Why do we do it? I don't know. Perhaps the sense of motive, when it came time to do, Dragnet, there's never that type of question. There's always an understanding you're doing it because you're dedicated to the department, you're dedicated to justice, you're dedicated to, principles and beliefs and these type of things that, ultimately drive it. And of course the character of the Lyon, I mean, you get to see this guy as somewhat of a sleazeball is a nice way to put how it comes off in this episode, and, you know, keeping with a rating, I guess that's about as much as I would go. And you compare that, I think, almost, you know, when you listen to all the different shows, like I listened to Johnny Madero. The big difference, I think, between, say, a Johnny Madero and a Jeff Regan and Dragnet is that ultimate sense of nobility and purpose that he actually found with the detectives of the Los Angeles PD. And We'll go ahead and open this up. If anybody's got a comment, you can type it in the chat as give the information, and then we will sign off if there are no comments. If there are comments, I'll answer them ever so briefly. You can email me, adam@adamsweb.us. Visit the blog, www.orble.com/dragnet -radio-show. And if there's nothing else, I thank everybody so much for listening. We will be back. Oh, I got a request to talk. And go ahead, HollowBoy07. Okay, thank you very much. And hello, Ben Wilson is coming in as we're just about ready to wrap up here. So again, email me, adamadamsweb.us. And you can also visit our online community, dragnetradio.ning.com. Please cast a vote for us on Podcast Alley. We appreciate it. Podcast Alley. Just put in Dragnet in the sidebar. You can cast your vote. No need to leave a comment. And I think that is it. So thank you so much for listening. This is Adam Graham signing off.